Now, there's another remarkable moment in those October 1962 Oval Office tapes. On October 22nd, JFK announced the U.S. naval blockade of Cuba. The next evening, the president and his brother, Attorney General Robert Kennedy, discussed the blockade over dinner. And in one of those tapes, JFK says, "I don't think there was a choice." Bobby Kennedy responds to his brother, "Well, there isn't any choice." And he adds, if the president hadn't acted, quote, "I mean, you would have been impeached." And JFK agrees, saying, "I think I would have been impeached."
They were spiritual twins in a way that they would finish one another's sentences.
This is Larry Tye, author of Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon.
The term the Kennedy brothers was used perpetually, but it meant something quite magical. It didn't just mean a co-presidency. It meant two guys with very different strengths who gave the country this opportunity to see not just brothers working together, but collaboration in the best way of trying to solve our problems.
Tye says it's impossible to understand JFK's legacy without understanding the relationship he had with his brother. Again and again, Bobby Kennedy filled the role assigned to all the younger Kennedy brothers: advisor, supporter, and most importantly, protector. Their political relationship was forged in a 1951 trip the brothers took to the Middle East.
Most significantly on that trip, Jack got deathly ill, and Bobby essentially saved his life. He brought him to Okinawa. He got him the medical treatment. His temperature went from 107 back to normal. It was the Addison's disease that Bobby would later help Jack cover up. And if Bobby hadn't been there, who knows whether Jack would have survived.
I mean, is that one of the reasons why in your book you write that their relationship was a reversal of normal sibling roles, with the younger doing extraordinary things for the other, that Bobby was his brother's keeper?
So that was exactly the way that Joe had raised his kids. It was that whoever was the oldest was going to be the first to be president, and the younger ones would look out for and do whatever it took to advance the career of the older one. And Bobby did that more brilliantly than even Joe had ever scripted. He did it when Jack first ran for Congress from Cambridge. He did it much more when he ran his campaign for Senate. And then when Jack ran for president, Bobby was his campaign manager, was his alter ego, was his hatchet man. And as much as any single person alive, it was Bobby Kennedy who made Jack Kennedy president.
Okay. I understand that Bobby Kennedy volunteered in, what, 1946 to work on a campaign, a congressional seat that JFK was running for?
It was. It was that seat from Cambridge, and he had enough faith in Bobby that he gave him the district that mattered the least in East Cambridge, one that he was convinced he was going to lose. And he put Bobby there. He basically told his best buddy, take him out to the movies and don't have him hanging around too much. And he had no sense that this younger brother who Joe Kennedy had described as the runt of the Kennedy litter, Jack had not much faith that he was going to amount to much or be much good in that campaign. And of course, Bobby, like he always did, took that as a challenge. He went out, and while he didn't win his district, he came closer than anybody had dreamed possible, and he proved just how good he was to the point where the next time where it really mattered, when Jack was running for Senate, there was no question who was going to be in charge of that campaign.
I see. So you write about Jack as the statesman and Bobby as the hatchet man.
Absolutely. And that was, in a way, a reversal in roles. Everybody thought that Bobby was the tough guy, the ruthless guy, the mean guy. And the truth was that Jack was just better at having a veneer of being the gentleman. But he was actually the tough guy. And after they did a hatchet job on somebody, it was Bobby who would go the next day and find out, are you really all right? And it was Jack who said, let's just move on.
So let's talk about then the run for the White House in 1960. What specifically did Bobby do on the national level that really distinguished that campaign?
The high level stuff was he understood just what a fresh guy coming out of the war, a war hero like Jack, could be. And he was running against people who looked like they were 200 years old, like Lyndon Johnson. And Bobby understood just how to position his brother in terms of the guy of new ideas, the guy who was going to create what they called new frontiers ahead for America. Bobby helped Jack craft that in a really brilliant way. but he wasn't content in doing that, and he understood that the high road only goes so far. And so what he also did was, we had talked earlier about how sick Jack was when they were traveling in the Far East, and Bobby understood that his brother had Addison's disease, a very serious condition back then that could be fatal. He had the treatments for the Addison's disease stashed in safe deposit boxes in places around the country where Jack was going to be campaigning. And they all understood that this was something that mattered to Jack and that if the public understood it, it could doom the campaign. So they lied about it. And that's the kind of low road or deception that Bobby was willing to practice on behalf of his brother. And between the high road and the low road, he pioneered a new way of campaigning to the point where Richard Nixon said that he learned his best tricks from Bobby Kennedy back in 1960.
Amazing. I mean, and as evidence of how remarkably successful the Kennedys were, until several years back when we got a fuller understanding of JFK having Addison's disease, the number one public image or the number one image in the public's mind of the Kennedys is of hale and hearty youth, right? Like, right,
exactly.
This family that's in the flower of youth and representing a new age for America.
And that image in the most famous presidential debates ever, the Kennedy-Nixon debates, it was that image that, as much as anything he said, that would give Jack the edge.
You credit Bobby with the decision to put Jack on television.
He decided that the contrast would look great. He decided that it was really essential when you're running against an incumbent vice president that you look like you can handle the stage as an equal with him. And he knew that Jack was smart enough and was affable enough, and that Nixon was not an especially appealing-looking guy. He knew that exactly what happened would happen, which is that the country would come away thinking that Jack Kennedy was somebody they wanted over Richard Nixon.
Yeah, I mean, the political acumen on display is truly remarkable because it's one of the defining moments of the dawn of the age of political television.
Absolutely.
We've been talking a great deal about how much Bobby Kennedy supported and influenced Jack Kennedy's rise here. Was it understood throughout that whole time that should Jack win the White House, which of course he did, that Bobby Kennedy would come along with him, as he did as Attorney General?
So the gift that Jack gave Bobby the night of their election victory was an engraved case that said, "You're after me, you're next." It was very clear in the way that Jack brought Bobby along that he was not just coming along for the ride as Attorney General, that he came closer to being a co-president than we've ever seen in America's history, and that all of that training, everything that Jack pulled him in on, everything from politics to the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis, that this was all training Bobby to be Jack's successor.
So remind us, though, I mean, how much pushback was there? How much criticism was there from outside the Kennedy family for this decision to have the brother as the Attorney General?
So there was a lot of pushback, to the point where a law that's getting a whole lot of attention today in the era of Trump with the Trump family, the so-called nepotism law, is known on Capitol Hill as the Bobby Kennedy Law. And it was passed because of the fear of having families take over a White House like that. And it turned out Bobby Kennedy, when he was appointed by Jack as Attorney General, may have been the least qualified person ever to be named to that position. Mm-hmm. Jack joked that he was giving Bobby the job to give him a little bit of legal experience. He's got to be the only Attorney General ever who had never tried a case in a court of law. And yet, by the time Jack was assassinated, Bobby, I think, deserves to go down as the best Attorney General in the modern era in America.
To this point about the fact that a lot of people are paying close attention to family members in the White House today, can we draw any parallels between the Trump administration and the Kennedy administration in terms of the importance of the role of family here?
Lots of parallels in terms of the confidence, or you could describe it as arrogance, in thinking that because you were elected president, that your brother or your daughter or your son-in-law belong in the White House as well. And Bobby Kennedy was, on the one hand, a case study of the arrogance of a president thinking that his brother deserved to be Attorney General, and yet he met the highest of standards, whether the issue was civil rights, whether it was going after organized crime, whether it was cracking down on an allegedly corrupt Teamsters union and Jimmy Hoffa. Bobby Kennedy did all of that. He defied all the Democrats' political wishes by going after Democrats as well as Republicans. And if the Trumps could live up to that kind of a standard of even-handedness and of an exemplary service, then we can excuse the nepotism. Mm-hmm. And where they are on that, I'll let you and your listeners judge at this point.
Yeah, that's a big if. And I mean, I think a lot of people might say we should still not excuse that nepotism for a specific reason. And that is that, I mean, family bonds are deep, right? Family loyalty is powerful. And there's constantly the concern that if you're surrounding yourself by family relations, that you may be surrounding yourself by people who can't or won't say no to you, who have blind spots about who you are, which is not what you need in the White House. I mean, did that happen in the Kennedy administration?
So I agree with you, and I agree that the risk is huge. But I want to push back just a little bit because there's another side to that. On the one hand, you want people who aren't your family and don't seem to have this untouchable status because they're the daughter or the son-in-law of the president. On the other hand, Bobby Kennedy proved during the Cuban Missile Crisis and at lots of other times that he was willing to say things and push back against the president in a way that helped the country and in a way that no other cabinet officer would ever have done.
Give me some specific examples.
Yeah. A perfect example of it was when the president didn't want to file a tough civil rights bill. He worried about re-election. He worried about the Democratic South and alienating all of his constituents there. And it was only Bobby Kennedy among all of his advisors who said, you got to do this. This is right.
So, Larry, obviously so much went on in the first couple of years, well, I guess the only years of Jack Kennedy's presidency. We can't go over it all because it was cut short on November 22nd, 1963, when the president was assassinated in Dallas, Texas. I want to talk with you about what effect that had on Bobby Kennedy. But before we do that, I want to play a little bit of tape. It's of Robert Kennedy at the Democratic National Convention in 1964, the year following the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. So here's Bobby Kennedy.
When I think of President Kennedy, I think of what Shakespeare said in Romeo and Juliet, when he shall die, take him and cut him out in little stars, and he shall make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night and pay no worship to the garish sun.
That was his first real public coming out after his brother's death. When, in November of 1963, Jack Kennedy was shot, Bobby Kennedy lost three things at once. He lost his brother, his best friend, and his whole sense of personal and political purpose in the world. After a month of helping the family and the country rally after his brother's death, Bobby went off a cliff. He had what Ethel, 50 years later, says was serious clinical depression. Mm. And that speech was his first coming out of that depression and having a sense that he wanted to again play a public role. He decided to run for senator from New York. And he went through something that was as devastating. He actually started, at Jackie Kennedy's suggestion in those days, reading Greek tragedy. Mm-hmm. Now, it was unusual enough for Bobby Kennedy to be reading anything, and the idea that it was Greek tragedy was amazing. And he saw in the story of the Greeks the story of the Kennedys, a family with great hubris whom were struck by tragedy and suddenly lost it all. And he understood that he had to rebuild in a way that Greek tragedies were talking about doing. And he did that in his life. But the death of his brother was his epiphany moment.
Did he see the continuation of his own political career and ambitions as a continuation of his brother's, which were cut short?
Yes. So one step beyond that, he saw his brother as a continuation of his father. He saw himself as a continuation of his brother. It was all about what the whole family had always stood for, and yet Bobby stood for it in a way that I think would have taken him a step beyond what Jack did. Bobby was more passionate than his brother. He was less patient than his brother. When Jack Kennedy was asked in the later years of his presidency, when are you going to give us a strong civil rights bill? When are you going to attack poverty? When are you going to get us out of Vietnam that you had put advisors in? His answer was always the same, when I'm reelected. I think if Bobby had been elected president, his answer would have been 5 minutes from now, that he would have tried to do everything in the earliest days. And if Jack Kennedy's 100 days, his first 100 days, became memorialized, Bobby would have done it in his first 100 hours.
Huh. Overall, Larry, it seems to me after this conversation that, you know, if we're going to look at the Kennedys, we can't fully understand one man without the other.
Which explains why 100 years after JFK's birth, we're not just looking back at him, but we're looking back at them and this whole sense of Kennedy family royalty.
Yeah. You know, I mean, out of fairness, there are some people who may be listening to this and thinking that, Larry, you're a little too enthusiastic about the Kennedys because, of course, this is a family that's not stranger to controversy either. Their private lives aside, in their political actions as
sure.
well.
So we talked only briefly about the other side of Bobby, yeah. all the bad things he did. He lied about his brother's Addison disease. He lied about his role in the book 13 Days, the first insider story of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Bobby lied about his own role during that crisis. He was, in fact, for the first 6 days, one of the biggest hawks, and he made himself out because he was running for president as a dove. He did lots of things wrong, and nobody will read my book and think that I'm too adoring of them. But in the end, who he was in 1968 and the sense of hope he gave us is not just about nostalgia, it's about today.
Well, Larry Tye, he's the author of Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon. Larry, it is always such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Love being with you. Thank you.
And you can find links to all of WBUR's coverage of 100 years of John F. Kennedy at radioboston.org. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.